from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delphiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm Ben Price, the final countdown.
Everybody needs to get out and vote. Go get them. We can do this.
That is our top story at noon, Election Day, 1 week away.
This election is a choice between a Trump super recovery or a Biden super depression.
Donald Trump is the worst possible president to try to lead us through this pandemic.
Joe Biden is in Georgia today after a surprise visit to Pennsylvania yesterday. The former VP deflecting that he's been taking it easy as of late.
I'm going to Wisconsin, I'm going to Georgia, I'm going to Florida, and maybe other places as well. There's a lot we've been doing.
And after his whirlwind tour of Pennsylvania yesterday and a swearing-in ceremony at the White House last night, President Trump back at it again today. He'll be in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nebraska. Last night at the White House,
I, Amy Coney Barrett, do solemnly swear.
Amy Coney Barrett sworn in as the nation's newest member of the Supreme Court.
She is one of our nation's most brilliant legal scholars, and she will make an outstanding justice on the highest court in our land.
Barrett's confirmation to the high court comes just 38 days after the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and she's expected to see action soon on a number of high-profile cases.
The 48-year-old is expected to be seated in time to hear some key cases, including one involving LGBTQ rights on November 4th, and another challenging the Affordable Care Act on November 10th. She'll also be on the bench to preside over any cases that might arise from the presidential election.
Legal analyst Deborah Smith, CNN and MSNBC, by and large, skipping covering last night's swearing-in ceremony for Amy Coney Barrett.
This is the whole reason why cable news, 24/7 cable news, was invented for moments like these. Sure. And it wasn't like there was other breaking news relatively going on yesterday. So to not carry this, that's media malfeasance in its finest.
Media critic Joe Concha says CNN and MSNBC have become an embarrassment to the news profession.
And in the end, it's not about informing viewers anymore. It's providing them comfort food while engaging in the bias of omission.
Concha says nowhere is that being seen more than on social media, where Twitter continues to block the fourth largest newspaper in the country, the New York Post, after it dared to write an article critical of Joe and Hunter Biden. Fight night in Philly. Riots breaking out in the city of brotherly love after police shot and killed a man with a knife. At least 30 police officers were hurt, including one who was run over by a pickup truck. The female officer suffered a broken leg. She is expected to survive. The driver of the pickup has been arrested. As for the shooting, the two officers involved have been suspended.
You want to, neutralize the threat as quickly and as safely as possible.
Former NYPD Lieutenant Darren Porcher.
Many people speak to the introduction of a taser into this equation. But when we look at the video in this particular encounter, the officers didn't really have much time nor space to act.
And the family of the 27-year-old who was shot and killed says he suffered from mental health issues.
Shoot him in his leg or not shoot him at all.
The investigation into that shooting continues today. In Philadelphia, federal health officials say the weather is having an impact on COVID cases across the country.
As the weather cooled across the north, we see these activities that were happening outdoors and then brought indoors has resulted in pretty significant community spread.
Dr. Deborah Birx chairs the president's coronavirus task force. COVID cases in the U.S. have jumped almost 40% the past month, and many of the victims have been caregivers. Correspondent Cammie McCormick continues.
The CDC says 6% of adults hospitalized with COVID-19 from March through May were healthcare workers. Over a third of those were nurses, most with direct patient contact. Most were women, black and older, and had underlying conditions like obesity. 4% died. This study says nurses account for a large proportion of the healthcare workforce, so this has implications for the capacity of the entire healthcare system as the pandemic continues. continues.
That's Tammy McCormick reporting. In Southern California, a pair of wind-whipped wildfires forcing more than 90,000 people out of their homes.
I have some place to go, thankfully. I got a dog to worry about now.
Wind gusts nearing 100 miles an hour, preventing air support to fight the flames. Colder weather, meantime, in Colorado has helped in the fire fight there. Still to come this Tuesday, deadline day for mail-in voting in Pennsylvania. COVID testing for every single SUNY student in New York, and how the pandemic is crippling college athletes.
Well, very good afternoon to all. We're stuck in the moist airflow for another day or so. Then a little brightening comes our way tomorrow. The end of the week, though, could see their weather. Forecast details coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania. Tuesday, October 27th, SUNY students across New York will have to test negative for COVID if they want to go home for Thanksgiving break. Officials say they hope testing students before they go home will help prevent spreading the virus to towns and cities across New York and around the country. SUNY's 64 colleges and universities have been told to come up with plans to test 140,000 students by early November. Most of the schools will go all remote after Thanksgiving break to prevent students from bringing the bug back to campus. A local political pundit sounding off on the significance of Pennsylvania in this year's election.
Pennsylvania's 20 electoral votes are the biggest prize in this country.
Political consultant Mike Barley says whoever wins Pennsylvania will win the White House. And even though most polls show Joe Biden in the lead in the Keystone State, Barley says all the momentum is with President Trump.
I think that anybody who thinks that President Trump is out of this has not learned their lesson from 2016. When we polled in many races, you asked, who do you think your neighbor's voting for? The overwhelming majority think they're voting for President Trump.
Barley says Trump may have secured a win in the Commonwealth after Joe Biden's remarks in the last debate, suggesting that he'd phase out the oil industry if he wins the White House. Well, if you want to vote by mail in Pennsylvania, today is the deadline to do that. So far, over 3 million Pennsylvanians have asked for a mail-in ballot, and the courts have recently ruled that election officials can count those ballots 3 days after the election.
I think, unfortunately, regardless of who wins either side, I think the other one likely will challenge it again in court. I think that's unfortunate. That's what's keeping me up.
House Speaker Brian Cutler says under state law, ballots cannot even start being counted until Election Day morning, so there's no way a winner will be announced on election night from Pennsylvania. Cutler predicts it's going to take several days to declare a winner in this year's presidential race in Pennsylvania. From mail-in votes to early voting, let's head to New York. With Election Day a week away, officials say over 400,000 folks have already cast their ballots during the first weekend of early voting.
Basically, our message is it's safe to come out and vote, whether you do it by absentee or in person.
John Conklin with the State Board of Elections says fewer polling places, though, means some folks are standing in line for over an hour to vote. Blair Horner is with the New York Public Interest Research Group.
It really is a failure of the government if there are long lines, because they're the ones who are supposed to spend the money to make sure that our constitutional rights are protected and that when people go to vote, they don't have to stand outside to do it.
The folks have until this Sunday, November 1st, to take part in early voting in New York. 61 cases of COVID have shown up at the DeMay Living Center in Newark, New York. Officials say 47 patients and 14 staff members have contracted the virus at that nursing home in Wayne County. 4 residents have been hospitalized. Pennsylvania Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine says nearly half the counties in the Commonwealth are under the gun for COVID-19. 30 of the state's 67 counties have an infection rate higher than 5%. The Commonwealth's top doc, though, is confident hospitals will not be overwhelmed.
Our healthcare systems are now better prepared to address the virus than they were in the spring. But we must all do our part to prevent a further increase in hospitalizations, particularly as flu season also approaches.
Overall, Pennsylvania's COVID-19 rate soared to 5% this week. That's up from 4.2% last week. Dr. Levine says folks should rethink the upcoming holiday season and opt for smaller gatherings. Family Life's Terry Diener.
Dr. Levine says even though that's a really challenging concept, that's what's being recommended by the CDC, and that's what her department is recommending as well. It comes as Pennsylvania has seen at least 1,000 new cases of COVID-19 each of the last 21 days. There were 3 days in the past week with more than 2,000 new cases. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Health officials reminding you to play it smart this weekend. If trick-or-treating is still allowed in your community, the experts recommend putting candy on a table outside of your home.
Lost upon us that after we have holiday weekends, a period of time after that, we see upticks. And so we just need to be smart with our gatherings. We need to be smart with our own families, trick-or-treating, small groups.
Onondaga County, New York, Executive Ryan McMahon. A number of communities all across New York and Pennsylvania have canceled trick-or-treating this year because of COVID. The Pennsylvania Department of Health teaming up with faith-based communities in the state to launch COVID-19 testing centers in and around Pittsburgh and Harrisburg.
Our testing is open to both symptomatic and asymptomatic adults 18 years of age and older.
Janine Peterson with Hamilton Health Center says it costs absolutely nothing to get tested.
Those interested in being tested can walk up or drive up to our testing locations. And while there is no out-of-pocket cost, those being tested are required to bring some form of picture ID. That's so we can also contact them following the results of the testing.
Peterson says you also don't need an appointment to get tested for COVID. Buckle up. In the back seat,
Governor Cuomo has signed legislation that requires all passengers in a vehicle that are 16 and over to wear a seatbelt. Previously, passengers over the age of 16 only had to wear a safety harness if they were in the front of the vehicle. The governor says the measure will help prevent needless tragedies. The new law in New York goes into effect on Sunday, November 1st. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Local college athletes sounding off on having their basketball seasons canceled because of COVID. Anna Felice plays hoops at SUNY Brockport, which scrapped the entire women's basketball season earlier this month.
People are losing their jobs and stuff, so it could be worse.
Felice, who played her high school ball at Owego Free Academy, says she's disappointed, but she's taking it all in stride.
I'm a sophomore. Like, it's not my senior year that I'm losing.
It was pretty heartbreaking.
Anna Raymond plays at Morrisville. The Newark Valley graduate says she was looking forward to her senior year, but the pandemic stole it away.
We came off of a really great season, so we were really looking forward to getting back to that stage again.
Raymond says the health crisis has taught her to not take anything for granted and to appreciate the moments you have in life, both on and off the court. On the gridiron, Chicago loses big. Sunny time, 2 minute drill.
Yeah, starting with Monday Night Football, Jalen Ramsey and Taylor Rapp recorded interceptions of Nick Foles. The Rams crushed the Bears 24-10 in Inglewood to improve to 5-2 on the year. Head coach Sean McVay said had to stop that offense.
But we knew what a great outfit they were. We knew how responsible they were for a lot of their wins that they had and the way that they got it done. Wanted to minimize those chances and thought those guys did a really good job executing the plan.
The Bears fall to 5-2 and they have to get their offense going, says head coach Matt Nagy.
I don't ever remember in having our own defense score more than our offense. That's hard to do. So that part I don't like, and that bothers me.
Eddie Jackson returned to fumble for the Bears' only touchdown in defeat. How about a victory? Washington football coach Ron Rivera celebrating a huge milestone. The coach finished his last chemotherapy treatment yesterday. He was greeted by healthcare workers before he rang the bell that signifies his completion of therapy. Rivera was diagnosed with skin cancer back in August, but did not miss any games, just a few practices. And of course, to make it even better, his Washington football team crushed their rivals, the Dallas Cowboys, on Sunday. And the Los Angeles Dodgers look to put the finishing touches on their first World Series championship since 1988 tonight. They take on the Tampa Bay Rays in Game 6 with a 3-2 series lead. Dodger manager Dave Roberts can't wait.
We're going to have our hands full.
But I like our guy, and I think it's going to be a close game. And, you know, the team that gets the big hit, makes the big play, is going
to
win.
Tony Gonsolin gets the ball for L.A. while Tampa turns to Blake Snell. The Rays lost their only previous World Series appearance in 2008. Their manager, Kevin Cash, hoping Monday's day off helps.
There's a guy, I mean, Yandy's starting to swing the bat a little bit better here. So the vibe in the clubhouse, I heard a couple guys, you know, just saying, hey, let's go. Enjoy the off day. Get ready to play.
If needed, a deciding Game 7 will be tomorrow. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Tuesday, Amy Coney Barrett, now a Supreme Court Justice, teaching men to be men. Meet today's hometown hero and home for the holidays, KFC style.
The battle for hearts and minds in a culture is very often the battle over the use and the definition of language. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. During the confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett, Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii expressed outrage and shock that the nominee would use the term sexual preference instead of sexual orientation. Sexual preference, announced Senator Hirono, is an offensive and outdated term used by anti-LGBTQ activists to suggest that sexual orientation is a choice. It is not. After the exchange, Merriam-Webster, which apparently, like most Americans, had not gotten that memo with these new linguistic absolutes, quickly changed the definition of sexual preference in its online dictionary to indicate that this wording is now offensive. Who knew? Well, beyond the Orwellianism of literally changing the dictionary to support a political claim, it seems that Senator Hirono is the one who's actually behind the times on this whole sexual orientation versus sexual preference issue. According to Dr. Glenn Stanton, in an outstanding new article at Public Discourse, Judge Barrett's terminology is actually more in line with the latest thinking of leading gender scholars. For example, Professor Sari Van Anders at Canada's Queen's University has stated that, quote, sexual orientation as a term is increasingly seen as regressive because it belongs to the bioessentialist project. Translating to English, what she's saying is that the word orientation suggests that sexuality is hardwired. And according to Professor Anders, that's just not the consensus anymore among her peers. Though the whole born this way claim was once a very useful slogan to advance gay rights, it no longer serves the goals of the LGBTQ movement. Years ago, for instance, two scholars at UCLA questioned the concept of sexual orientation, especially for women, suggesting instead that women's sexuality and orientation are fluid, changeable over time, and variable across social context. There's also a more obvious problem with the idea of a fixed orientation that's found in the very initials of the acronym, especially the B, the T, and the Q of LGBTQ. As political commentator Douglas Murray, who identifies as gay, by the way, writes, bisexuals continue to be viewed as some kind of betrayal from within the gay community. Gay men tend to believe that men who claim to be bi are in fact gays in some form of denial. Yet, according to a Pew Research report from last summer, bisexuals account for almost half of all LGBTQ adults in the U.S. In fact, the authors of a new book published by Harvard University Press think that male bisexuals, or those who call themselves mostly straight, vastly outnumber exclusively gay men. Thus, they conclude, the old system of gay, straight, or bi has, as Stanton puts it, outgrown its usefulness. An even bigger challenge than the B to the born this way dogma is the T. Gay rights and gay marriage were sold to us on the premise that homosexuality is hardwired, maybe even genetic, like race. But anyone claiming transgender as an identity does so in spite of physical and genetic realities, not because of them. Well, one wonders whether Senator Hirono would feel as compelled to lecture the various social scientists that Glenn Stanton cites in this article. Phrases such as sexual orientation or sexual preference or whatever the latest nomenclature are terms made up not to describe reality, but to advance the idea that has revolutionized so much of our culture and politics, that sexual attraction and urge define and determine who we are. That's the idea we can never embrace, even if we're facing faux outrage from a senator. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 minutes past the hour. Let's head outside.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We're going to stay on the murky side of the ledger for another 24 hours or so before higher pressure tries to brighten the skies and warm the air a bit tomorrow. Meanwhile, We're going to watch tropical storm / hurricane Zeta. Its remnants could combine with historic cold in the heartland to bring the northeast rain and snow at the end of the week. The call for this afternoon into tonight is cloudy and damp at times with pockets of light rain, fog, and drizzle. A little change of temperature, 40s most of the afternoon, upper 30s, low 40s tonight. Tomorrow, gray skies break for some sun, up into the 50s we go. Thursday, cloudy with rain arriving in the 40s, and the rain will flip to snow in parts of the area later Thursday night and Friday morning.
Don't say snow. Thank you, Kevin Williams. If you're just joining us, here's some of the stories we're following for you today. Tuesday, October 27th, Election Day, a week away, folks. President Trump campaigning in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Nebraska today. Joe Biden is in Georgia. Over 62 million Americans have already voted. And pundits say Democrats have been the lion's share of those votes. But Sean Trendy at Real Clear Politics says, we've seen this movie before.
People are just starved for data. They're getting excited because we're close, and now we have these early voting numbers. But we did this in 2016. People looked at heavy Democratic turnout and early voting and thought Hillary had it in the bag. And then everyone showed up on Election Day, all the Republicans, and voted for Trump.
Trendy says all the data he's seen points to a possible repeat of 2016.
At this point in 2016, the Democrats were doing even better. They had about a 13.5-point lead. Right now, the Democrats' lead is about where it was at the end of the early voting period. So right now, this actually looks a lot like 2016 to me, which wasn't such a great year for the Democrats.
The New York Times reports that as much as 10% of the electorate won't say who they're voting for. Sean Trendy says he sees those folks as shy Trump voters. Amy Coney Barrett, now a member of the U.S. Supreme Court.
I, Amy Coney Barrett, do solemnly swear.
After taking the oath of office, Barrett briefly spoke.
I will do my job without any fear or favor.
President Trump praised the High Court's new member.
She is one of our nation's most brilliant legal scholars.
Democrats, including Chuck Schumer, have different opinions.
The American people will never forget this blatant act. Bad faith.
Today, Barrett will take a second oath, then she can begin work as a justice.
That is Steve Futterman reporting 24 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report, a Tuesday edition on Family Life. Edition of Hometown Heroes on Family Life. I'm your host, Bill Price. Our guest this week, Josh Hatcher from Bradford, Pennsylvania. He's teaching men how to be men. This is a fascinating topic, especially these days when you almost have to apologize for being a man. Men, it seems to me, are constantly ridiculed and put down because of this politically correct world that we live in. Now, you mentor men, what do you tell them?
The key of what we're trying to do is to help men be better men. I think that we do have a culture that says to them, being a man is bad, that being male is a patriarchal, controlling, evil thing. And it shouldn't be that way. That's not the way this is supposed to work. We're made different and unique. Yeah. And so I want men to know it's okay to be who you are and who God made you to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything that you see on TV, every television dad is a bumbling idiot.
We've gone somehow from Clark Gable and Cary Grant to Homer Simpson. When you look at how men are looked at in today's society, what are you hearing from most men today, Josh?
So many men are not sure how to parent their children, how to love and lead their wives. And I can't tell you how many men whose wives have left because there's no emotional connection between them, and how many parents I've talked to, how many dads that they don't understand what to do and their kids are in trouble again.
And then you throw this pandemic on top of everything that men have to go through, and it's some difficult waters to navigate. I was kind of checking you out online. It sounds kind of creepy, but in a good way. And you've got an amazing story, Josh. Just looking at the before and after pictures of you, quite a transition there, dropping 100 pounds. First off, congratulations. That's an awesome accomplishment there.
Thanks. That's definitely the start of it. It's funny because during the pandemic, I put some of that back on.
but mm-hmm. not all of it.
Join the club.
It's a lot harder to be disciplined when the whole world is out of order, you know?
Yeah. So,
you know, I'm working on it. And that's one of the things I tell the guys too, is look, like, I am not perfect. I'm not some guy that's coming in here and telling you, hey, live your life like me. I'm saying, here we are, men. Where do we go from here? And I think we're working on it together. I get as much out of the conversations and relationships that have kind of grown out of this than I get as much out of it as they do. Men need a brotherhood. You know, we're meant to be in a band of brothers where we drive and fight and work hard and do hard things.
Yeah.
That's how we become more confident. You do hard things.
Sure.
And if you fail, then you do it again, and then you learn.
And I want to kind of hold men's feet to the fire here, because in a lot of ways we're responsible for this lack of respect, and that we have to live up to what it means to be a godly man, godly husband. But I look at some guys today, and I'm saying to myself, come on, you know, step up.
Yeah, I actually, I talked about this on an upcoming podcast that I recorded, but I talked about that victimhood that we can fall into, and we look at what our culture is doing to us, and then we start to complain and feel oppressed. And then the other path that we often take is we just give up. We just resign ourselves.
Yeah.
And I've been there. I have been there.
I was online the other day on Facebook, and I'm scrolling through, and Gucci is now created a dress, a male dress for men to wear. It's a $1,200 dress, but it's for guys. You got to be kidding me.
There's a definite feminization of our culture when it comes to men, and telling men that it's bad to be masculine and that it's okay. And don't get me wrong, I couldn't imagine how hard it would be to be a man who is confused about his gender, who is confused about his identity and where he fits. I mean, I can look at that guy with compassion, right? And say, that would be really bad to not know if I'm a man or a woman and where I fit. So I can look at that man with compassion, and I can treat that man with respect, even if I don't agree with the choices he makes.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to say that it's good to be a man.
And I feel like we're kind of going against the tide here, like this snowball. You talk about the feminization of our culture. This snowball has already started rolling downhill. Are we too late to stop this, Josh, in your opinion, or can we right this ship?
What it comes down to is we have to look at our circle. It's really easy to look out across the nation or the world or even your region, and you see all these problems, and then you focus on, oh, I can't fix this problem. But you know what? You can fix the problem in your house.
Yeah.
You know, you can reach your children. You're the gatekeeper of your home, and what comes in through media and the doors of your home, that's up to you.
Pennsylvania, this week's Hometown Hero. Join us next week as we search for your home, your town, your hero. It's Hometown Heroes on Family Life.
The big show comes your way every Tuesday during the Noon Report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. We're going to stay on the murky side of the ledger for another 24 hours or so before higher pressure tries to brighten the skies and warm the air a bit tomorrow. Meanwhile, we're going to watch tropical storm / hurricane Zeta. Its remnants could combine with historic cold in the heartland to bring the northeast rain and snow at the end of the week. The call for this afternoon into tonight is cloudy and damp at times, with pockets of light rain, fog, and drizzle. A little change of temperature, 40s most of the afternoon, upper 30s, low 40s tonight. Tomorrow, gray skies break for some sun, up into the 50s we go. Thursday, cloudy with rain arriving in the 40s. And the rain will flip to snow in parts of the area later Thursday night and Friday morning.
Okay, Kevin Williams, thanks for the heads up. Finally, at noon, the Colonel bringing back the holiday fried chicken scented 11 Herbs and Spices Fire Log. This will be the third year in a row Kentucky Fried Chicken fans can make their homes smell like their favorite fried chicken over the holidays. KFC says the Fire Log, quote, is designed to make your home smell like fried chicken and feel as warm as an extra crispy drumstick in a KFC $20 fill-up. And for the first time since its release, the Fire Log can be purchased this year at Walmart. The best $16 you've ever spent. That is the world we live in for a Tuesday. As always, thanks for coming along. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.